I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. My guest now has written what is widely considered to be the most important book of the year. Ezra Levant's book, Shakedown, How Our Government is Undermining Democracy in the Name of Human Rights, is a stirring, shocking, and sometimes frightening look at the world of human rights commissions in Canada. It's amazing the power these bodies have, and when wrought, dangerous. This is a well-researched, passionate book, and in part due to Mr. Levant's own experience with the Alberta Human Rights Commission, when as publisher of the Western Standard magazine, he reprinted those controversial Danish cartoons of Muhammad as part of a news story. He remains the only person in the world who has faced sanction over printing those cartoons. He not only discusses that experience, but a litany of disturbing and peculiar cases which have made their way to these tribunals and have cost those involved very much financially. The ramifications for all of us are tremendous, least of which is the concept of human rights, which has morphed into something very different and perilous. Ezra Levant is a lawyer, journalist, and political activist. He is a frequent commentator and former political operative with the Reform and Canadian Alliance parties. Here's what Rex Murphy said in his review of the book in the Globe and Mail. Quote, Levant is a clear thinker, a very patient researcher, and an advocate of real courage. Shakedown is published by McClelland and Stewart and is a terribly important and necessary book. I am pleased to welcome to the Planta on the Line program Ezra Levant. Good morning, Mr. Levant.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. The genesis of human rights commissions was where and when? Was it in the 60s, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, look, remember what the 50s and 60s and 70s were like. It was a time of civil rights on the march, Martin Luther King and the Just Society. And it was a time when we were making society a little bit more equal before the law. And it made sense to have some sort of organization to fight for human rights, and it sounded like a good idea at the time. I mean, remember, back then, Canada wasn't as integrated, as multicultural. I mean, if you were Jewish, you might be kept out of the country club. If you were black, you might not get a job. If you were Aboriginal, you might be kicked out of an apartment. So it made sense to bring in human rights commissions, or at least it seemed that way. But here we are, 50 years later, and I'm not saying Canada's perfect, because people aren't perfect, but I think we've overcome a lot of those problems. We've got a woman of color as our governor general. We've got we've had a woman as a prime minister. We've had a Sikh premier. The majority of citizens in Toronto are minorities, and we get along. So this group of people, these bureaucrats and lawyers who 50 years ago probably had real things to fight, today they'd be out of work if they fought for real civil rights. So they're focusing on more and more extreme counterfeit human rights that aren't really human rights at all, like the so-called human right not to be offended. Well, that's not a real human right. So what's happened is these human rights commissions are actually hurting our real human rights by chasing after these ridiculous ideas that are really political agendas masquerading as human rights.
Someone who was at the fore at the time, Alan Borovoy, he's become a strident critic of the commissions that he's sort of the architect of, correct?
You're exactly right. Alan Borovoy was one of the greats. I mean, in the 60s and 70s, he really fought against injustice on the streets as a demonstrator and in the courts. And he was, I'd call him sort of the godfather of Canada's human rights commissions. He's in his 70s now. And when he looks at what they've become, how they've become nuisance litigants, how they've become shakedown artists, and how they become censors, which is how I got involved in the whole thing, he says that they're like Frankenstein's monster. He's like Professor Frankenstein, and this is his monster, and he wants to pull the plug on it. He's actually written that the laws should be amended to trim them back down. It's amazing. It would be like Martin Luther King, if he was still alive, saying that's not a real human rights issue. It's amazing.
Well, how have they gotten away from their original intent and purpose? I mean, who let that happen?
Well, part of it is, as I mentioned, I mean, over the years, the real battles have been won. And instead of moving on, you know, doing a victory lap and then moving on to a different job, they stayed there as a make-work project. And the problem with that is the work that they're doing to keep busy actually hurts society, hurts our harmony, hurts our real human rights. I mean, in my case, they censored me. I mean, look, I know that freedom of speech is a key human right, the freedom of the press, freedom of expression, freedom of religion. But all those things were violated when the Human Rights Commission prosecuted me for 900 days for printing some cartoons in a news magazine. I mean, that is nutty. Human Rights Commission should be defending my right to publish those, not attacking my right. Crazy.
Now, the Western Standard has since ceased publication. Was it because of these cartoons that stopped?
No, but it sure didn't help. I mean, to be saddled with such legal fees did not help the magazine. We went out of business because we weren't making money. And now, the website continues to exist, but it's operated by someone else. But look, no one should have to go through the hassle and the cost and the stress of a human rights investigation for having a political idea. That is so un-Canadian. It's the Canadian way that we get to have our opinions, even if the government doesn't like them. I mean, some would say that that's the key freedom, being able to have your own thoughts. But that's what the Human Rights Commission's went after. That is not a real human right.
So how much did it all cost you? I mean, you were able to do this because you had the resources. You were able to fundraise.
That's right. Through my website and my blog, I was able to tell people around the world what was going on, and they were so outraged that they chipped in. I mean, the human rights complaint cost about $100,000, but other lawsuits piled on. Human Rights Commission staff sued me. They filed complaints with the Law Society to try and get me disbarred because I was criticizing them. They were all nuisances, of course, but, you know, that was the point. It was to cost me money and time and stress and make me want to give up. Of course, I didn't, but not for their lack of trying. If it weren't for my friends and supporters around the world, I would have been crushed.
And that has happened in some of the cases that you've talked about in the book, that people just who can't afford simply just give up and pay.
Really, most people, 90% of people just collapse. I call the book Shakedown because so often the Human Rights Commission, once you realize the trouble you're in and that you don't really have a chance because it's not a fair court with the same rules and procedures we have come to expect in real courts, people say, well, how do I get out of this? And the Human Rights Commission says, well, if you just pay us a few $1,000s and agree to make an apology, we'll pretend this whole thing never happened. It's a shakedown. And I was offered that deal, too. I was told that if I paid money, several $1,000s, to the complainant in my case, and if I gave him a page in the magazine that I couldn't edit, that I could be set free. And I just don't accept that. I don't accept that shakedown. It felt like extortion.
In your case, you consider the complainant a nuisance, really.
Well, a nuisance, but that's a very friendly way of putting him. And he also happens to be a racist. He also happens to be a bigot in his own right. I mean, on his website, he quotes a terrorist leader approvingly. On his, he's written in the Calgary Herald that Canada should be governed by Sharia law, which is, you know, would make the Quran our constitution instead of the constitution that we have. I've seen a video of how he runs his mosque. I mean, he's extremely sexist. He shouts women down, and they have to sit at the back when they're having a meeting. I'm not even talking about prayers. I'm talking about a meeting at his mosque. He shouts the women down. I mean, he's a misogynist, bigoted, anti-Semite who, for example, he says that the Jewish government in Israel are worse than the Nazis. I don't even know how that's possible, but he said it. I mean, the guy is a bigot in his own right who clearly doesn't give a damn about human rights, but he saw this Human Rights Commission as a weapon with which to fight me. I mean, he doesn't like me because I published the cartoons. He doesn't give a damn about human rights. But he saw this Human Rights Commission as something that was open to his abuse. And so he managed to sic them on me for 900 days. It's abominable that a secular government agency could be hijacked to prosecute a religious fatwa for so long.
And all he did was send in a handwritten, poorly written complaint, correct?
Well, yeah, and what was so crazy about it is it quoted legal justification for suing me, but the legal justification was not from any Canadian law. It was passages from the Quran. And just stop for a minute. Imagine if a bishop or a priest had gone to a Human Rights Commission and said, shut down that gay rights magazine. What's my legal justification? Well, right here in the Bible, this chapter says you got to do it. I mean, he would be laughed out of the office. I mean, and if anyone was polite to him, they would say, I'm sorry, we don't prosecute religious lawsuits. We're a secular society. You're welcome to follow the Christian faith, but the rest of us are welcome not to do so. That's what a Catholic priest would have been told if he tried to get the government to sue his, quote, enemy. Well, not so with this radical imam. The government, instead of saying him there's a separation between mosque and state, they did the opposite. They said, sure, we'll spend $500,000 worth of public money prosecuting a publisher you don't like.
So, but for day-to-day cases, for regular people, if you will, for people who encounter, say, harassment or prejudice or discrimination in the workplace, where should the aggrieved go? Are you saying that
Well, that's a great question, because, look, I'm not saying that people are perfect. People are flawed, and they always will be until the end of time. And there are problems in life. Now, most problems, I think we should ignore or just deal with personally. If someone's rude to you, don't dial 911. Ignore them or tell them they're being rude or just handle them like a grown-up. If someone tells a racist joke at the office, don't call the police or the Human Rights Commission. Go over to them and say, look, the way you're talking right now is not appropriate, and spend some of your personal social capital on it and, you know, make a fuss instead of running to the government. Now, let's say someone's fired from a job because they're black. Well, in Canada, we have centuries worth of legal tradition in employment law. And if you fire someone without cause, and being black is not a legitimate cause, you have to pay them severance. And actually, in our laws, if you fire someone in an angry or mean way, you have to pay them even more severance. So we already have recourse for people who were fired because they're black or Jewish or gay or whatever. And it's a lot fairer because it's in real courts run by real judges with real rules, unlike these kangaroo courts. Same thing if you're kicked out of your apartment because you're gay or Aboriginal or whatever. That's not allowed. You have a lease, and it can't be broken without cause. And being gay or Aboriginal is not a reason that your contract can be broken. And again, we have landlord and tenant law in this country that goes back centuries. And you just can't do that. We don't need these human rights commissions to be a second layer of courts, this subterranean kangaroo court system that most people haven't heard about, that doesn't follow real rules and that has unfair procedures. Real discrimination can be dealt with already by our justice system, and many times it doesn't even require a justice system. It just requires individual Canadians to take some personal responsibility for their own words and for the words of their friends and family and at work. I think 95%, 99% of problems can be handled just by being a good citizen and telling, and if someone says a racist joke or whatever, we'll tell them not to do that. If things get really bad, there are legal mechanisms. We don't need these busybody commissions.
So you're not in favor of fixing them, you just want to do away with them.
Yeah, I think they should be weeded out because they are actually a menace. They're actually more of a problem than they are a solution. I've read 100 of their rulings, and I cannot say I've seen a single case that made me think, ah, they did a good job. Not one.
And in the other countries, do they have similar bodies like this?
Well, most countries that have human rights commissions, it's so telling, most countries that have them don't have human rights. Most countries with human rights commissions are third world dictatorships that have human rights commissions simply as a ruse, as a camouflage, to mask the fact that they don't have real human rights. And I think that's quite telling. I mean, if you look at the United Nations Human Rights Council, it's run by countries like Iran and Libya and the former Soviet Union, Russia, places where human rights are not valued, but they sure allow saying, oh, we're on the Human Rights Council because precisely that. It is a cover for their real bad behavior. So it's a pretty good correlation between places that have human rights commissions and places that don't support human rights. And unfortunately, even here in Canada, our human rights commissions are on the wrong side of human rights. I think that if you have true human rights in your country, you probably don't need a group of busybodies noisily saying they're for it.
In the book, there are a number of examples of these cases, as I mentioned. British Columbia seems to come up a lot. What is it about this place, about this province, that factors so much in these sort of peculiar cases that you list in the book?
Well, BC's always a little bit more exotic and rambunctious than the other provinces, and that's part of it.
Aren't we? Yeah.
But also out here, I think that you've got some very radical Marxist activists who have turned the BC Human Rights Tribunal into the worst in Canada, and I say that after having looked at there's 14 human rights commissions in Canada of about 1,000 employees in the industry nationwide. BC's the nuttiest. BC is the place that found a human right not to have to wash your hands when you work in a restaurant. BC's the place that found a human right to take a comedian to court if he says jokes that aren't funny. BC's the place that found a human right for a 6-foot-something male transsexual to work in a battered women's shelter, even though the rape victims did not want him there. I mean, BC is a great province. I love it. But the Human Rights Commission is kooky. It is cuckoo. It is such a menace. I mean, this is the place that had a 5-day trial, a show trial, of Maclean's magazine, the Mark Steyn, for publishing a political item on radical Islam. I mean, a five-day show trial about censoring a magazine, that is not Canadian. That's more like something from Communist China or even from a Saturday Night Live sketch. It is not Canadian.
And incidentally, Mark Stein wrote the foreword to the book.
Oh, yeah. He's been turned into a fighter on this issue, too, because he can't believe that in all the countries in the world, it's Canada that's being so censorious.
And in the Mark Stein case, he not only appeared here, he was hauled in front of another commission, more than one, is that correct?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, look, if you're charged with a real crime, you know, you don't have to be a lawyer to know that you can only be charged for it once. Otherwise, it's called double jeopardy. And if they can't convict you once, you're free to go. I mean, it's just fair. Otherwise, you would be charged again and again and again and again until they manage to find you once. But that's just not justice. Well, Mark Stein and McLean's magazine were hauled before three human rights commissions for the same complaint. His antagonists were forum shopping. They were shopping around. Now, the Ontario Commission didn't take the case, neither did the federal one, but the BC one did. Just so frustrating. It's just another example of how these kangaroo courts are not like our real courts and how they're less Canadian.
I understand that you brought the book to 24 Sussex Drive last week. Is that right?
I did. Mrs. Harper invited me by, and I did, and I dropped off the book, and I signed it, and I hope that it is an impetus for the federal government to make some change.
What's the indication you've been given on how the Harper Conservative government will proceed on this?
Well, they seem very shy to move forward on it, even though I know they agree. At their last policy convention in November in Winnipeg, they voted 99% to repeal the censorship provisions of the Human Rights Act. That's great. Well, they haven't acted on it yet, and I think they're shy. They're worried that someone's going to say, oh, you're against human rights, when in fact, repealing that censorship provision would be strengthening human rights. But I guess they've got other distractions going on now, too, the recession, the fact that the opposition tried to have a coalition government, and there's a lot of things going on in Ottawa these days. But I am hopeful that in the long run, we will get politicians to remedy these problems.
Has it frustrated you that the left or small L liberals haven't been more vociferous or active in rethinking human rights commissions?
Well, I have to say that I've been pleasantly surprised by how supportive a lot of liberals have been. I mean, when the Toronto Star newspaper, which is left of center, supports the repeal of the censorship provision, when, you know, This Hour has, when Rick Mercer does a rant on it, when even the Tai, who interviewed me yesterday, seemed very sympathetic to freedom of speech. Look, liberals, in the main, get it. They get that freedom of speech isn't just for right-wingers or for left-wingers. It's for anyone who has an opinion, especially for people who have a dissident or minority opinion. I mean, if these human rights commissions were around 50 or 100 years ago, attacking what they called, quote, offensive speech, well, Martin Luther King probably would have been rounded up. Certainly those calling for gay rights would have been rounded up. That's my point, is that if you don't have money or power or well-connected friends, sometimes all you have is an idea and the ability to articulate it. That's why liberals and those for the downtrodden should always support free speech, always support offensive free speech, because any new idea that's going to change society, by definition, must offend the current order.
Other than buying the book, what can the ordinary citizen do? I mean, what do you mean? Should we write our MP and tell them to get rid of these commissions?
I think so. I mean, I have sort of a two-step plan. It's very simple. Step one is let people know how crazy these commissions are. I call that denormalization, because they're not normal. Step two is once we've denormalized these commissions and everyone knows they're a fraud, then step two is getting politicians to act and to change the law. You can't do it out of order. You can't ask a politician to make a change until you've built a demand for that change.
And you seem to be, Ezra, a lightning rod for the right in this country. And this is what frustrates me, that because of that, a lot of people who would be in favor of free speech, who would be in favor of human rights, the true concept of human rights, haven't come to your defense or haven't paid attention to your struggle. Do you think that's the case there?
Only those who are real partisans. And look, sometimes I'm a partisan Tory, so I can understand why partisan liberals and New Democrats don't want to rush to my assistance. But anyone who's not a hardcore political party member should be able to get over the fact that I am a conservative and should be able to say, who cares if he's a conservative or a Green Party or a Marxist-Leninist? He has the right to have his opinions, even if they're wrong, especially if they're wrong. And like I say, other than partisans, most liberals get it.
And going across the country on this tour, you've hit up a number of cities and talked to a lot of people. Do you think we are getting it? That soon there'll be change?
Well, I don't know how quick politicians will act. That's always a risky thing to bet on. But certainly step one, the denormalization, is well underway. I have had such a warm reception as I tour the country with this book. Media who normally wouldn't really be receptive to my ideas because they would say, oh, he's a conservative or whatever, have been very supportive of this book. I have to say it's been almost universal, almost unanimous.
Congratulations on it, Ezra. You've done a tremendous job and a tremendous service, I should say, and continued good luck with the book.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for interviewing me.
You're welcome. The website for more, in fact, is EzraLevant.com. The book is called Shakedown, How Our Government is Undermining Democracy in the Name of Human Rights. McClelland & Stewart is its publisher. Ezra Levant on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.